When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and I am so excited and so delighted not just to be back, but to be joined this season by my new co-host, Natalie Sawyer. You heard her during the World Cup. You all loved her. You all love the podcast. And some of you even said that I might benefit from having another adult in the room, or maybe just one adult in the room. So welcome, Natalie.
Oh, Gab, thank you for that introduction. That's lovely of you, and it's great to be back as well. And as you say, not only are there two of us this season, but there'll also be two shows a week. We're going to be bringing you a half hour show every Monday, and from next week, a new preview show every Thursday as well.
Now, if we sound a little bit wonky, there's an explanation. I'm not actually in the studio with Natalie right now, but I will be this season, never fear. I'm actually coming to you from a special secret lair where people stash drug money and stuff like that in Lugano, in Ticino, in the southern part of Switzerland. But don't worry, I will be back in time for the start of the season. With Natalie in the studio are Times writer Alison Rudd and the very excellent deputy football correspondent of The Times, Matt Hughes. Welcome, the two of you. Now, today we're going to get right into it because we've got a big season to preview, and where better to start than with the title race. Alison, it's a straight fight between Manchester City and your beloved Liverpool, isn't it?
Oh, I like being contrary, but I can't be on this occasion. Right now, as we speak right now, it does look that way. For big reasons and little reasons. The little reasons first, just from the Community Shield, which we should not ever read too much into. I'm aware of that. But that little cameo when Claudio Gomez made his debut and he got a second on the pitch. But it was preceded by a lengthy team talk, tactical talk and intense analysis from his manager. I mean, Pep Guardiola is clearly not taking his foot off the gas. And if he gives as much attention to detail, it looks like he's going to give more attention to detail this season than last season. He's spoken very well about, he knows what the pitfalls are if you're the title holders. He knows it doesn't come easy to defend your title. He's also aware that he's a perfectionist and his players do eventually, over his history as a manager, burn out a little, get tired a little of his approach. But if you're aware of your faults, that's a big step to making sure they don't come back to haunt you. So City look like the same City, but maybe just more intense version. Mahrez is their big addition. He wasn't pulling up many trees at Wembley, but he does look terribly relaxed, like he might slot in well. And Liverpool, of course, have done something. Even before they made the signings they made, people were saying, surely they're going to be the team that challenged Chelsea. And their signings and their approach have been astonishing. I just didn't expect the club as a whole and Klopp as a manager to talk in such aggressive terms about what they want to achieve and to be so ruthless in the marketplace. So I think it's going to be between those two clubs. Yes, Gab, I do.
And Matt, I mean, Alison alluded to the fact that it's not easy to retain your title. In fact, it hasn't been retained by a team in the last 10 years. So are City capable of doing it?
They look capable. It's a bit of an anomaly that, and we have, not only has no one retained it, normally if you win the title, you totally bomb and finish 10th or have a relegation. But that's how crazy the Premier League's been the last few years. Obviously, that won't happen to Man City. I think there are two main factors. They obviously, last year, had the strongest squad by distance, the most meticulous, ambitious manager, and they've retained all their players. And, you know, Mahrez isn't, he's a squad player, he's useful. I think I'm surprised they paid that money for him, frankly, but he will give them more options. And looking around, no, other than Liverpool, no one else has strengthened, really. Tottenham are as they were. Chelsea, total state of flux. The managers had 2 weeks to prepare. Manchester United have signed a few players, but not enough for the manager, clearly, as he's been moaning about, as he's interrailed around America. And you struggle to see where the challenge is coming from. Liverpool can beat City in a one-off game. They're the only team last year who showed they could beat them three times. But the question for them is, can they do it every week? Can they go and win at Bournemouth and, you know, see out a game and be ruthless? That's going to be that's the sort of question that will define the season, I think.
I'm going to be contrarian for a change. Hughesy, obviously, if you try to pick holes in City, it's not easy. But the fact is they wanted to sign an alternative to Fernandinho. They missed out on Jorginho. How important is it that somebody comes in to fill that role between now and Thursday or maybe in January? Simply for the reason that if something happens to this guy, you know, you're looking at what? Gundogan, Delph in that role? Unless I'm forgetting somebody.
Stones.
Well, come on, seriously.
Possibly.
Seriously. He's been there. He sat there yesterday.
Stop it. Stop.
Guardiola almost said he was his most important player last season, so I agree with you. But equally, the improvement he's got of Delph and the way he's turned him into a serviceable left-back suggests that, you know, in some games he could do that job in central midfield. So City have so much of the ball against all but, you know, Liverpool and Tottenham. I think they could kind of cope with anyone playing in there, to be honest.
Anthony, you talked about Liverpool's transfers. When you look at who they've brought in, have they had the best window so far?
Yes.
Is that your biased hat on?
I don't think it matters if it's biased as long as I admit it's biased. And then if I was being a bit silly, I would then admit it. But come on, they've spent so much money. And yet, I mean, we're talking big fees all around the sort of 50 mil mark. But none of them appear to me to be overpriced. Certainly when you think about how those individuals would fit into the team. So in Keita, you've got a player, okay, I might be proven wrong, but on paper at least, and given what he's done so far in his career, he's such the perfect Klopp midfielder in that he wants to break up play and he prides himself on his defensive capabilities and his reading of the game. But he also, before he's even worked under Klopp, said how much he feels it's his role not to be destructive, but to instantly, when he wins the ball, to set an attack in motion. And that is exactly what Liverpool have to do. They have to win the ball and then go ping, ping, goal with the front three that they have. And they're capable of punishing every time they win possession. So if he'd gone for 70 or 80, you'd say, given that he fits the system so well, that is a fantastic signing. Firmino does what Fernandinho does for City, and we've just said how important he is for City, so important that the prospect of him being tired for a couple of weeks means that Guardiola is panicking about needing a ready sub for him. The most important signing is my namesake, Alisson, because it's not even about, he's a great keeper, there's no doubt about it. I don't think anyone would say he's not that good, but it's just that it just feels like the Klopp of old would have been a bit, I don't like it when people say I've got poor goalkeepers, I know best. And he's responded to some terrible goalkeeping crises, but he's responded, and he's responded with a flourish, a sort of flamboyance, a sort of let's go out and get the best then. You just imagine what a boost that is to those defenders to know they've got somebody with charisma and a reputation behind them. I mean, that could transform the way we see Liverpool as a defensive unit, because they were occasionally a laughingstock. So he's sort of adapted to the criticisms that have come his way. I think that's a big thing for a leader to do. It's really promising.
He has, but it's taken him 2 years. It's not, you know...
He got there.
He's not spending £60 million on a goalkeeper everyone else wants. It's not a sign of genius.
No, no, well...
It's a sign that he's been backed by
the
club.
Did I say the word genius?
No, but I don't know.
No, I think it's a sign... We're very good.
He'd be an idiot to start the season with Karius in goal.
But I think the Klopp of 2 years ago would have. That's the thing.
Which is why they haven't won anything yet.
Yeah, but so the fact that he's maintained the adoration of the fans and the media, apart from you, Matt Hughes, and he's adapted to what was wrong, and he has the backing of the club, and he's not even trying to say, it's all right, I don't want to spend that much on a goalkeeper. He's going for it. This is a very talented manager with a strong philosophy of how he wants to play the game, being able to bring in players that fit his system. If none of those players fit the Klopp system, it would look like panicking, or it would look like a manager suddenly been giving money he didn't know what to do with. But I think you try telling me that any of those players I've just listed don't fit the Klopp system.
Wouldn't dare. But you could argue that... You could argue if you had a proper keeper in last season, they'd have won the European Cup.
Yeah, okay. All right. And then you woke up, all right? Enough Liverpool. Although, I will chuck in my 2 pence here. I'd feel a little bit better for them, unless he knows that he's got more firepower off the bench up front, or that Solanke is really going to improve and to become a much better, much more consistent force. That would be my one concern in case Salah doesn't go and score a million goals again this year. My other warning would be Keita had a really difficult season last year, had some disciplinary issues as well at Leipzig. I absolutely love the signing. Obviously, it was difficult for him, perhaps mentally, knowing he wasn't going to be there. Maybe commitment issues. He's a fantastic signing. You have to put your trust in Klopp that Keita's head is right. I think personally Liverpool are up there. But what I really want to talk about, because it's 10 minutes into the show, and we need to talk about Manchester United, right?
We certainly do, Gab.
Yeah, and Mourinho's not been happy, and I know it's us in the media who are fanning the flames and fueling the fire, but guys, Husey, when you heard what he said this summer about, you know, when they were playing the game in the ICC and he's so down and he's kind of like, well, what kind of Muppet would go watch this? This isn't the real United. These aren't the real players. I might get one new signing in. And, you know, so far he has Fred, who I love. Diogo Dalot, who I think sounds like another guy on the Lindelof-Mendes wagon. And, you know, Lee Grant, who I'm sure is a very nice person. But... how do we feel about it? Are there storm clouds? Is there some issue, or is it just another, you know, big sort of media buildup to make Mourinho look bad, and then part of the whole anti-United agenda, which is pervasive in the national media these days?
I presume you're being sarcastic there. I think, if anything, it's the reverse. The media are bored of him now. He has to, because we've been hearing this every year for the last 15 years, he has to be ever more extreme, I think, to get in there. You know, to get in the papers. What used to be a back page lead, Mourinho moaning, is now just 3 paragraphs, because we've heard it all before. So now he's turned on the fans that were spending their holiday money to go and watch his team. Oh, it's tedious. I'm bored of him. I'm bored of watching his team. I'm bored of him talking. I think we should stop reporting him, to be honest. It's just
as simple as that. No
tiny, tiresome. The man spent £300-400 million in the last 2-3 years, and he's pleading poverty. And as you say, other than Liverpool, United have been the most active of the top six. So it's just nonsense.
Well, it is his third season at Old Trafford. We know all about the third season syndrome. So is he going to still be there by Christmas, Alison?
I don't think this is a normal third season, in that when you think of Mourinho,
he normally
has
success first.
Yeah, exactly. The third season is because you hit the heights and then it's hard to maintain them, and the players get tired of the approach and so on, and he only praises you when you're winning, and then if there's the stumbling block, he's too quick to point the finger at individuals. That's why he has the third season syndrome. He's had something of a syndrome his whole time at Old Trafford. I think it all started because he really wanted to go there, and the club itself was split down the middle. There were those who thought, we have to have him, he's one of the most successful managers. He will bring silverware. He's got the ability to bring that glitz glamour that Fergie had, and no one had since, really. There's an idea at Old Trafford that you have to be a particular type of character to cope with being in charge of the club. And Mourinho you know, it was on his list. He has a list, and his list ends with managing his country. That's how he's, you know, he's been quite reasonably open about it. And I think because it was, the narrative was there, and it didn't quite, and it hasn't quite worked as a marriage, there is, I can't, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not sure there's been a week where there haven't been rumblings that the football is not good enough, the style isn't good enough. It's so counterproductive to say it when you've really brought him in for his ability to win things, not how he, not the style in which he did it. But he gets there, he does win trophies, not the biggest, but he does win trophies. But there's this underlying moaning that it's just not of the Man United caliber. I can see why that really would annoy you if you were Jose Mourinho. And he's, whether it's a conscious thing that this miserable face and this moaning he does himself is his tactic to get squeeze as much out of the board as he can, and the I don't care what people think of me approach that he has to get through life. I don't know, but I don't see this as, if anything, I think there's a possibility that this particular third season syndrome might see him do better than he's done before, and then he'll go, rather than it be a slow death, actually.
Gab, you obviously brought up Manchester United. What do you make of it all then?
Yeah, I'm not as down on United, I think, as some people are. I was really hugely impressed with Fred last season when I saw him in the Champions League. And I think had he been fully fit, we would have seen him at the World Cup as well. And, you know, that midfield, you can fit Fred, Pogba, and Matic. As you know, I'm a Pogbaite, sue me. You know, you can have a tremendous midfield. You got Lukaku scores a lot of goals. What worries me is, again, the defense. I know he absolutely destroyed them. And I kind of feel, other than Eric Bailly, who's been kind of up and down, I look at this and I ask myself, well, gee, who's actually good here? That would be my concern. My one other thing I would say here is, and yes, this is going to be a wind-up to some, but Mourinho's saying, oh, we're no good, we didn't get enough new signings, blah, 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 my team's not great. It falls in the managing expectations category, right? You kind of tell people to lower their expectations and then you overachieve. Pretty standard. I don't know that we can go and criticize Mourinho for doing so when everybody's god, Gareth Southgate, did exactly that before the World Cup by going on talking about how young they were, how inexperienced, blah, 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 the process. So I'm not suggesting Mourinho's copying Southgate in that sense, but I think the message that comes out, the dampening expectations and not talking about winning Champions Leagues and the Premier League, I'm wondering if that isn't, to some degree, doesn't fall in the same category.
Let's not forget, there is a crucial factor we're overlooking here, which is that Chris Smalling is now vegan. Huh. It could be the big difference.
This season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League. It's just £8 for an 8-week trial. We've done the Northwest. Let's come down to London then and focus on those teams. Tottenham, 3 consecutive top 3 finishes under Maurizio Pochettino. Is it surprising that he's not brought any additions in, Matt?
Not really, because it's Tottenham and they do things, they don't do a lot, and when they do it, they tend to do it late, so it'll be an interesting 4 days in North London this week before the window closes on Thursday. Pochettino, I think, will be a bit frustrated, and end of last season he was making noises about the club having a choice and needing to make decisions, and they yet haven't kicked on at all. I guess the crucial factor is they've got Kane to sign a new contract, the manager himself has signed, so I think they're going to be in a holding pattern for the next 2-3 years till they get the new stadium up and running and those revenues kicking in. And I think if they can stay in the top 3, that's a success for them. I don't think that squad is ready yet to win the title, which is frustrating for the fans, I imagine. But you know, their real missed opportunity was the Leicester season. They should have won that league.
And what about you, Alison? I mean, 9 players were still involved at the semi-final stage of the World Cup. Is that going to be a factor to Tottenham? Are they going to be tired? There's also the Harry Kane issue, and that he doesn't like August for some reason.
Yeah, he was looking tired during the World Cup, Harry Kane. And although a lot of what England did that was nice was built around the Spurs connections. Overall, I think the Spurs players did look a little tired. Yeah, they did. They're already looking tired. I think I've said on this podcast before, I think he just gives too much during a season. I think if Pochettino has made a mistake, it's in listening to the player, because Harry Kane will say, I'm ready, I want to play, regardless. And he hasn't rotated him enough. Especially when a player's recovering from ankle injuries or whatever, I just think you have to be a bit more careful about someone like that. There are players that can just keep going and keep going and keep going, but when you've got the evidence that he doesn't like August and he does suffer regular burnout, maybe you should have handled it better. The most fascinating thing, because we've seen what happened to West Ham, as Matt alluded to, that is how they cope with the new stadium, because they keep banging on about how they're back home and it's the same. They're back at White Hart Lane, it's the same. It's like only a few feet pushed the other direction. It won't be the same at all. It's a beautiful thing, and everyone who's looked at the plans and looked at how it's going has said this is going to be an absolutely stunning location to watch football. But it does affect a team to know it's your home, but you're not used to it, and it'll be a treat for all the opposition players to go, and they'll have more fun than Spurs do. So I think Pochettino is going to have to dig deep into his arsenal of clever tricks to get through a tired team, tired Harry Kane, and yet another new place to play.
Yeah, Gav, I was going to ask you about that. Is that a factor at all in your mind, the fact that Tottenham do have to negotiate?
No.
Yeah, exactly. The stadium.
Stadium's all nonsense. Same thing last year with Wembley, I think. What would concern me more is actually, what is Pochettino thinking, right? Because he could have gone. There were other clubs that he could have gone to. Obviously, a big job opened up at Real Madrid after he committed to staying at Tottenham. I think the Alderweireld situation is not a good one, and he may or may not leave. And if he does, it won't be probably for what he's actually worth. And that's not going to make Pochettino happy. And then one other thing is, when we often talk about owners, we like having Papa owners and good owners and bad owners. I don't know if people know that Daniel Levy does not actually own Tottenham. He kind of operates Tottenham on behalf of somebody else. And in the spirit of the new season and putting the boot into the powerful, especially the ones who always get away with the pass, there's a man named Joe Lewis. He owns Tottenham, yeah? He's a billionaire. He's a tax exile, yeah? He's a self-made billionaire who made his money in Britain, benefiting from the education and the government spending and everything in Britain. And then what did he do? He's the guy who busted the pound in the ERM back alongs with George Soros back in the early 90s. And now he lives as a tax exile, so he doesn't have to give money back into the country that made him, that enabled him to go and make all his money. And when we talk about, you know, Tottenham being stingy and not spending money, everybody makes it seem as if it's, you know, Daniel Levy, some kind of miser. But Daniel Levy, I believe he has shares in the club, but he's an employee of the club. And I just wonder, to some degree, and I know it's not nice picking on people in their 80s, but if to some degree people should move beyond Levy and complain about Tottenham not spending money and look at the guy who actually, ultimately, owns the football club. Am I wrong, Hughesy?
No, you're not wrong, but you never see or hear from Joe Lewis, so he's just not in the conversation.
Well, presumably Levy does, right?
Yeah, yes, and he watches games at home, I'm told, but he never, I can't remember the last time he ever been to Tottenham. He's, you know, the epitome of an absentee landlord, basically.
Oh, I know, but imagine, look at the stick, and I know we'll get to Arsenal, but look at the stick that, like, you know, Kroenke gets for not spending money and so on. Look at the stick the Glazers got when they took over. And it seems to me like when it comes to Tottenham and not spending enough money, everything is directed at Levy. And never at the guy who ultimately, it's his club, presumably, he tells Levy what to do.
Well, not on a micro level, he won't, no.
Levy's very proud of his reputation for being stingy and pulling off astute deals at the last minute. He likes to cultivate that.
Yeah, and part of it is down to his own ego. I mean, I think he is a very good negotiator, but he has taken it too far on occasions to the detriment of the club.
Okay, let's go from North London for now to West London. Chelsea, yet another new manager. A disappointing season last time out. They ended up, fifth in the table. It's Maurizio Sarri that's now been charged with taking over from Antonio Conte. And Gab, I want to ask you this, really, because I'm guessing you're going to know a little bit more about him, perhaps, than most of us. But he's considered so revolutionary that they've come up with this term of Sarri ball. What exactly is that?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what they mean. I mean, but by the way, James Gearbrand's done some really good reporting on Maurizio Sarri. It's in the paper. Search for it. You'll find it. Anybody out there wants to know more about the guy, because he really is an incredible story for where he got. But basically, there's elements of Bielsa. There's elements of Pep Guardiola. He plays this version of 4-3-3, where they press high. There's a lot of coordinated movements. It's a very attacking system. It's a high line, as you saw certainly, I think, in the Community Shield. And you know, it's certainly a huge change from the guy before him, from Antonio Conte. My main concern with Sarri is that, you know, his football is very different. It's difficult to learn. It takes time to learn. You saw, you know, it took. And again, there's parallels with Klopp as well, but you saw it took Liverpool a while to go and metabolize his style of football. It took City a long time to do it as well, and that was with better players. The concern at Chelsea is, does he have enough time to work with these people to get his message across, and how quickly will that happen? And, of course, Husey, Hazard and Courtois, are they going to be around?
Hazard will be around. I think Courtois will go this week, but ultimately, the price for Hazard is even beyond Real Madrid's reach at the moment, so I'm pretty confident he will stay. And that partly explains the sort of stasis in transfers at Stamford Bridge, because they've kind of been waiting to see who goes out before they make their move to get players in. And so far, Jorginho is really the only significant addition. They're still looking for another centre-half, a midfield player, and of course a goalkeeper to replace Courtois if he goes. If they can get those players in this week and only lose Courtois, I think they'll be pretty happy.
Husey, why do they need another centre-half when you've got Christensen, you've got David Luiz, you've got Cahill, you've got Rudiger?
Because he doesn't like Cahill. I'm not sure he's convinced about Rudiger.
David Luiz isn't good in a back four, I don't think.
No, and he hasn't barely played for 8 months, has he? They have bodies, and they might struggle to get those players out, actually. Again, that's another reason why they've been waiting. I mean, they've also got lots of midfield players. They've got the squad is just sort of big in terms of numbers, but I think it's a bit short on quality. And I feel for Sarri, because he just hasn't got time, especially with the new transfer window deadline. He just hasn't had time to get to know these players. He's got to make a decision on Ruben Loftus-Cheek in about 3 or 4 days, basically. The whole situation is ludicrous.
Yeah, I mean, he was appointed late, wasn't he? July 14th, he came in at Stamford Bridge. Is there any concern about up top for Chelsea? Alvaro Morata started well last season, but sort of seemed to fade. And as much as Olivier Giroud works hard on and off the ball, he's not, I guess, prolific, Alison.
Well, in the game on Monday, Paul Hurst gave him 3 out of 10, Morata. Which is actually pretty as low as you get in the Times, isn't it? That's zero in most other places. He was sluggish and disappointing and seemed to be carrying on his previous season form rather than feeling an injection of new life under a new manager. I don't know what it is about him. Ever since he gave that interview where he said he didn't see his future in the capital of London because it was a bit noisy and dirty, there's been two versions of him that we've seen here. One's been athletic and ruthless in front of goal, and one's been a bit head elsewhere. You feel head and heart elsewhere. So, yes, I think you're absolutely right, Natalie. If I was the new manager at Chelsea, I'd be frustrated, because I know you've seen what he can do. And Giroud had a really peculiar... I mean, I think he's saying the right things, isn't he? Giroud's saying he wants to stay in England, even though...
He proved a good signing last season.
He did
better than he basically made himself first choice, having been signed as a last minute kind of panic move.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, exactly.
Won the World Cup. So.
Yeah, exactly. But he won the World Cup in a really weird way. He did it in a really selfless way. He didn't score goals. He just made sure the rest of the team knitted together well, which is a very selfless thing for a centre forward to do. whether that's something he can transfer to Chelsea, I doubt, because they don't, they just don't have anything like that type of setup. And there's no parallels with the France team at all, I think. Any team that's got N'Golo Kanté in it, you can't write them off. I would see them still finishing in the top four, I think.
With the Chelsea strikers, I'm going to stick up for Sadi a little bit here. He hasn't had a chance to work with these guys. He doesn't necessarily need a target man. I know people look at Morata and Giroud and Tammy Abraham, who's there too, right? England international. But, you know, he achieved tremendous things the last 2 years at Napoli, playing with a tiny, prolific, Belgian, tricky guy who's really a winger playing up front. If, as Husey says, that little man will stick around, and that would be Eden Hazard, in case you missed out on it, maybe you can play him up front. He can find solutions like that. That's less of an issue for him. He's not fixated on needing a big center forward. And, you know, you can't teach talent. Morata, I think, will come good at some point.
Gab, you said we've got to get on to Arsenal at some point. Let's do it now. And many fans got their wish with the departure of Arsene Wenger after 22 years. And it's now Unai Emery who's in charge. How do you rate their chances then this season?
What I find really interesting here is this is a club that's kind of been turned inside out, obviously, in the post-Wenger era. And with Mislintat and Raul Sanjehi, it kind of, to me at least, it feels a little bit incomplete right now. On top of that, this bizarre story, I know, Husey, you've written about it, we've talked about it, about Ivan Gazidis possibly either moving on in September or, if not moving on in September, certainly doing enough to perhaps scare Kroenke into suggesting that he might leave. I don't understand this at all. What's the deal here, Husey?
I mean, I still haven't gotten to the bottom of it. I don't quite see why he would make that move to Milan other than to make a serious amount of money. If he's given equity in the club or something, or, you know, a share in a future sell on. But it's, having worked so hard to get control of Arsenal over the last 5 years, to sort of walk out now would be odd to me. I mean, one theory is that Wenger for so long was the lightning rod for all the fans' discontent. Now it's basically Gazidis. He's got what he wanted. He's running the club. If it goes badly, maybe the fans will turn on him and he's kind of running before trouble comes. It's not great timing. And I know Emery won't be very happy with potentially losing the guy who brought him to the club in the first place.
Alison, what do you think his focus should be? Emery was so successful in the Europa League with Sevilla, winning 3 titles. Arsenal nearly got to the final last time around. Should he be focusing on Thursday nights then?
Well, he likes Thursday nights, doesn't he? I mean, maybe he's built his life around Thursday night routine. Maybe he does this thing. Maybe he has a curry on a Wednesday. And
exactly.
Relaxes on a Thursday and everyone thinks, oh, we like Thursdays, because we don't cope with Thursdays at all in this country. Any club in the Europa League is automatically written off being able to achieve anything at all because it's going to be exhausting and confuse their biorhythms. I don't know. I would say of all the clubs in the Premier League, Arsenal are the one. Most pundits would say it's really hard to predict what's going to happen. It really is. Not just because of, oh, it's not Wenger anymore. It's just, I think it's a really hard club to go into to work out what had gone wrong. And if all that had gone wrong at Arsenal, and it hadn't gone spectacularly wrong, they weren't relegated or anything, if all that had gone wrong at Arsenal was that one man had become too powerful and had not moved with the times. In some respects, you could argue he's got the easiest job in sport because he just has to come in with the new coaching manual and make sure everyone's fitter and they press a bit more and don't obsess about how pretty they look and they'll be absolutely fine. They might implode. I'm perfectly open to that being a possibility as well. But yeah, I mean, in some respects, you're right, Natalie. He clearly likes Thursday nights, so maybe they will do well in the Europa League.
OK, I think it's time for us to get all of your top four predictions. So let's start with you, Matt. Who's going to win and how are you going to see that top four shaping up?
I wish I'd had more notice of this, but I should have, you know, it's not the most left-field question. It's my fault for not thinking about it. hard to see past City. I would go City, Liverpool, United, Tottenham. I'm not necessarily saying in that order, but I think they will be the four, with City to win it.
I wanted you in the order, well, so that's what you've gone
did
for.
Did you not have to do it for the Times?
Well, I don't bother doing things like that.
He's a rebel, Alison.
Yeah, but you'd say silly things like saying, you know, Yara Littmanen is the best player that's ever played the game. And
you are
quite quirky.
Well...
Well, let's see how quirky Alison's top four is this season,
Burnley.
Then.
I put Liverpool top, then City, then Chelsea,
case.
Then United. And I've already explained why I think Liverpool are going to win the title.
OK, then. And Gab, go on, what's your top four?
I'll go City, United, Liverpool and Chelsea.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's talk about the opposite end to the table. Who is going to be going down? Wolves, Cardiff and Fulham both came up through the championship. And they're looking pretty strong, I would say, in some ways. So is it, as hard as it is to pick the top four, is it hard to pick a bottom three, Matt?
I think there are a couple of standout weeks. I think Cardiff and Huddersfield will struggle, frankly, looking at the squads. I think Wolves, as I expected them to do, have bought well, but the sort of standout, one of the standout summers for me has been Fulham, the way they've recruited. I mean, we knew Mitrovic was going to sign, having done well, but getting in Jean-Michel Sarri and Mawson, Schürrle, these are good players, and also, just as differently, they kept Sessegnon, so they're looking, and the manager who could have left, so I think they're looking pretty strong and should stay up comfortably. And Wolves have got huge ambitions. They want to finish top 10 and more. So I think Cardiff of the new boys will struggle. And obviously Huddersfield stayed up by the skin of their teeth last year and frankly are punching way above their weight anyway. So if they could do that again, that would be another miracle.
Gab, Wolves dominated the championship, sort of ran away with it, didn't they, in the end. And George Mendes, quite a big influence for Wolves, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think this is highly dubious, and I think there should be oversight and transparency in football, but alas, there isn't any. So, look, I have nothing against Wolves as a club. I don't like what's happened there. I don't blame Mendes for it, because you do what the rules allow you to do. I'm not a big fan of Nuno. I know they did brilliant last season. So I can tell you I hope they go down. And I hope those people leave, and I hope Wolves fans get their club back, and instead of just some sort of receptacle for moving players through. Cardiff, again, I'll put my hand up. I don't watch the championship, but I've seen the players. I echo what Matt says about them. My issue with Huddersfield, in addition to the fact that I think the squad is weaker, I felt like for much of the season we'd heard about Wagner's style of football, that he played so effectively the year before when maybe they did even punch above their weight coming through the playoffs to go up. But then I kind of felt at the end of the season when push came to shove, it became like sort of a giant bus parking and getting points off of demotivated opponents and whatnot. So Yeah, Huddersfield are my third team to go down.
Yeah, Huddersfield are the joint lowest scorers in the league last season, scored just 28 goals alongside relegated Swansea. So, Alison, are you with the same thought that it could be a real struggle this season for Huddersfield?
Yeah, it was so fairy tale for them last season, and it's hard to work out quite how they did it. I mean, everyone said going to their stadium was quite a treat, and they might have got the odd ball sucked into the back of the net by the crowd sort of thing going on. But you did feel they were the typical mother lifting a truck to save a baby team. They were pulling things out the bag they had no right to do. I just can't see a team repeating that without an injection of pace, nous and so on, which they haven't done. I agree completely with everything Matt said, really. I think Huddersfield, Cardiff are the most likely to go down, and it's who you add on top of that. Probably Watford, I would say, because they looked meandering towards the end. I watched them play blinder against Chelsea, but thereafter they were just meandering, maybe because they didn't feel in danger of going down, but I don't like that about a team. Just because you know you're not going to go down and you're not going to win anything, it still matters. The last third of the season, what you do, and I just didn't feel they had a style or character, really. So
Watford do that every year, though, don't they? They kind of basically are safe by March and then stop playing.
What, some point?
And then their manager gets sacked. And then they start quite well again, and it sort of repeats. That just seems sort of... I know what you say, the momentum thing can... But with Watford, it doesn't tend... And in the past, it hasn't hindered them.
Well, Javi Garcia is the fourth manager in the last three seasons, so he's going to need a good start because, as you say, Watford are a bit of an impatient side.
Oh, yeah, very briefless, the owners. And they haven't... got Delafeo in permanently, but they don't. You know, they've not spent a huge amount of money. I think Newcastle are interesting as well. I think they probably will get some players in this week, and ultimately they stayed up with something to spare last year. But you know, it was hard work, and Rafa can only continue doing that for so long.
It's really hard to make predictions about Newcastle, because if Rafa goes, then they're down.
Rafa
but if he stays,
Rafa won't go.
I don't think he will. But if he, that's what it's about. It's all about Rafa, really.
Yeah.
What about Crystal Palace, Gab? When Roy Hodgson took over, obviously they were in a doomed position early on in the season, of course, but there's so much talk about Wilfried Zaha and will he stay and will he go, and obviously they've lost Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who was so important to them as well last season after that loan deal's finished. Do you see Crystal Palace being dragged into a relegation fight?
I think potentially they can. I mean, and again, with a lot of these teams, and I throw Bournemouth into the mix as well, Everton, it's really hard to know until the transfer window closes what they're going to look like, because, you know, you talk about somebody like Zaha, right? Should he move, he's going to bring in an enormous amount of money, and then they can presumably bring in 2-3 high-quality players, and then you have to assess them, and they'll probably be playing a very different brand of football there. I feel okay about Palace, and then I think back to the fact that, you know, we've seen this so many years, managers change and there's issues with Parrish, and then somehow they go and they pull it out. I don't know. I find them really tough to decipher right now. A lot like West Ham, actually, because, you know, they certainly threw a ton of money around. Philippe Anderson's one of those guys who you look at the individual parts of the player and he looks fantastic. He looks like sort of a poor man's Neymar, and then, you know, you consider the fact that certainly last season he had his injuries, he didn't really turn it on a regular basis. And I just wonder whether, you know, he isn't the kind of player that really needs some manager to turn him, to get him to tap into his potential. To me, he looks like, you know, one of those guys who has a big upside potentially, but hasn't quite done it so far. A little bit, you will, like actually some of their other signings, like Wilshire, obviously, to me, falls in that category, as does Yarmolenko. I love Fabianski as a signing in goal. I think they'll miss Kouyaté a little bit. For me, West Ham really could go either way. Okay, you could be talking top eight, or you could be talking getting dragged into the relegation struggle.
Well, let's then talk about the surprise package, and perhaps West Ham could be the surprise package this season. Alison, who do you think could be a dark horse? Who could do a Burnley this time around?
I'm going to go for Palace. Simply because Roy Hodgson's done it before. he's rescued a team from the abyss and then suddenly found them in a Europa League final. And he stayed, he has stayed at Palace because of the amount of work he put into rescuing him the last season. He would not be there now if he didn't feel he'd got the groundwork right. A lot rests on Zaha, who I believe will stay. And if Zaha does stay, if you think about all that you carry over from one season to the next, sometimes it's negative baggage. But I think in the case of Palace, whenever you spoke to players there about how on earth they'd managed to pull themselves back from the terrible Frank de Boer experiment, they would say it's the way we're treated in training and the way Roy Hodgson gave us belief. He's such a good club coach, especially when the spotlight's off him. And I think he's built something there. And you're saying surprise package? This is just a guess, obviously, but I think you'll see a team that really knows what they're doing and are very well prepared and will have quiet ambition and therefore stealthily move up.
He scores the goals, though, if Zaha doesn't.
Oh, well, there's loads of problems still, and not least the fact they've still got the wage bill of Benteke there. It's not... You're asking me for a surprise package. I know all the reasons. This is why it's a surprise. It would be a surprise because there's lots. I know all the reasons why it should go wrong. But maybe you could make a case that at some point Benteke has to come good.
What about you, Matt? Who do you see sort of shocking us all?
Difficult. I mean, Burnley, you don't think they can do that again. They've not added much. And then they've obviously got Europe, which will make things very difficult. Southampton will improve, I think. A full pre-season under Mark Hughes. Everton are intriguing. Marco Silva is either, you know, the greatest manager there's ever been or a complete fool, according to, you know, the pundits. So it'll be sort of interesting to see what he does with that squad, because it is a good squad, and he has been backed by Mashiri.
There's no Wayne Rooney. That is such a bonus.
Yeah, of course. I agree with you on that. So you think Everton should be the sort of best of the rest, as it were. And I do think West Ham have recruited very well.
Hughesy, Everton finishing... Everton, we want a surprise here, right? Everton finishing seventh would not really be a surprise, would it?
Well, no, but... I
went for Palace.
She's
who
asking
are you
me
going
what
for?
I think will happen, so... Do you want me to say something ridiculous?
She's asking for your surprise of the season.
I don't think there'll be a surprise.
What would surprise you?
The surprise is there's no surprise.
Huddersfield finishing 17th would be surprising.
I'm on the Brighton bandwagon. I like what they've done this summer. I think Andone actually fits really, really well. I don't know whether Alireza Jahamanc can score goals in the Premier League, but I really want to... find out if you can. And I'm a big Chris Hughton guy, so I think they've got... I'm not talking Europa League, but I think, you know, finishing top 10 for Brighton will be a great result, given the resources, given where they are. So that's my pick.
Who's going to finish seventh, Gab?
Well, Everton, no surprise there. Marco Silva's a genius, you know that.
It pains me as it is. I do think Fulham could be a bit of a shock this season. I just think they've done really well. They were so fantastic last season, the Championship. And being a Brentford fan, I don't really want to big up Fulham, but there you go. Just finally, I want to ask all of you, what are you sort of most looking forward to this season? Gab?
I'm most looking forward to whether Maurizio Sarri can show a different type of Italian manager and maybe help sort of change people's stereotypes about, you know, ooh, dour defensive, blah, blah, blah. Or, because it seems to me so far, like, the Italian managers we've seen in the Premier League, they've all kind of been a sort of the Conte, Mazzarri, Shaudi, defensive intensity type, or they've been the Carlo Ancelotti, kindly uncle, players coach type. Sarri's completely different. To me, the story of a guy who never played professionally, literally started with a pub team in his spare time, didn't even do this job full time until he was 40 years old, had a real job, unlike most of these managers who, of course, never had a real job because they were professional footballers. I just think it's such a tremendous story, and I really want him to do well. And by the way, to all those people who say, like, oh, look, he never won anything, you guys are just fools for saying that, because he won loads of promotions, and taking Napoli where he took them to second place with one of the top five highest points totals in history, that is a victory. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to see how that works out.
Matt, what about you?
I'm looking forward to watching Liverpool and hoping they can put a bit of pressure on City, because, you know, as great as it was watching City last year, it's nice to have a proper title race. And I'm also intrigued to see how Tottenham get on in their new home. Looking forward to going there, actually. As Alison suggested, it is supposed going to be a fantastic new place to watch football, and probably more fun than the Olympic Stadium.
And Alison?
Well, Matt's stolen one of my answers. So the other one is, I am looking forward to seeing how one of the greatest players of all time, Gylfi Sigurdsson. No, I am a big fan of Gylfi Sigurdsson, as everybody knows. But I am really looking forward to seeing how he copes without Wayne Rooney insisting he takes the set pieces and runs the game. If Marco Silva has any sense at all, he will make sure that Sigurdsson runs that team. And I'm envisaging him playing beautiful balls out to Richarlison, who uses his pace and then knocks it back in for just beautiful football. It's possible, I think.
That is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, Alison Rudd and Matt Hughes. Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablets for only £8 for 8 weeks. Search The Times subscription for more information. We'll be back next Monday after the opening weekend of the Premier League season, including Emery's Arsenal against the champions Manchester City.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.